Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Pinkham Spaces. Hopefully, you can all hear me and you'll be able to get through to me. If you can't, then let me know, but we'll plough on, and I'm sure there's plenty to talk about, because even though Norwich City haven't played a game in the last, 10 days now, there has been plenty to talk about, and I'm sure there remains a lot to discuss going into this weekend's reunion with Bristol City for Liam Manning. The major news, Jose Cordoba out injured after picking up a hamstring issue on international duty with Panama. Manning confirmed at his press conference today that he will be out at least until the next international break, if not longer. That's just the headline in plenty of things to talk about. So if you would like to let us know what you make of things at Norwich City at the moment, tell us where things are going wrong, what you'd like to see changed, how confident you're feeling going into the weekend, then you can request to be a speaker somewhere along the bottom of the screen. And myself and my colleague Paddy Davitt will invite you on and we can have a bit of a chat about all things Norwich City. But I reference Paddy there. Delighted to be joined by him. Paddy, before we invite people on to speak, I want to see how you sort of see things, because obviously you spoke to Liam Manning at the press conference today. A lot of things still to think about, even though there has been a lot of time to dissect that that East Anglian derby defeat. But where is your head now with where Norwich are and kind of what they need to prove going forward?
Evening, Sam. Evening, everybody. I hope you can hear me. Thanks very much for joining us on the space. Strange one today. Left Colney and you couldn't help having sat and listened to Liam Manning, and obviously, the fact it's Bristol and that brings into sharp focus that unimaginable, family tragedy they had to sort of endure at Bristol this time last year. You just can't, on a purely human level, you want this to work for that guy, because, there's no doubt he's absolutely genuine. He understands, because he's from this part of the world. Yeah. He understands what this football club means to the community. He's desperate to get this club moving again. It hasn't happened as of yet. Everybody can see that. The results speak for themselves, or the lack of results, so to speak. He's picking up these unwanted records along the way. You know, 5 home defeats on the spin at Carrow Road at the start of the season. Then the first head coach in 16 years to lose an East Anglian derby.
Yeah.
So much focus now and scrutiny inevitably on him and his job prospects. And we obviously had Chris Sutton writing for us earlier in the week. And, he made some very valid points, I thought, about even if you made a head coach change, that doesn't solve a lot of the issues. And it's pertinent because while we're speaking on here tonight, Connor is down at Carr Road and there's an ongoing Q&A with a lot of unhappy supporters, is my sense from afar, from what I can see, from what Connor's putting in the live blog we're running, that around the Carr Road revamp and how that was handled and what it means, and the eviction of 3,500 season ticket holders, many who've sat in the same seats for decades and decades. We don't need to go and open up that again. We've talked about that liberally, but it all flows in, I think, Sutton's point that of itself, Liam Manning isn't the only issue. There's far deeper issues that predate him.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that is the shop window. What is not happening on the pitch, he's directly responsible for that. So it's understandable, rightly, that we are questioning him, his methods, the fact that he's been unable thus far to you know, really, you look at that team and you just don't see, certainly you don't see a path for this team playing this way to get anywhere near the top six, which was the expectation, which was the benchmark. And then if you drill into it further, they look so far off it in terms of some of the key fundamentals that you need in a top six grade squad.
Yeah.
But it's right that he is getting questioned. But as I say, that's a bit of a long-winded way of coming back round to today at Colney. And you left Colney thinking, boy, this guy, you just hope it can turn and that he finds something, his coaching staff finds something, those group of players have found something over this international period so that Saturday, Bristol City come to town and the story isn't the Heat is ratcheting up on Liam Manning. The story is, right, is this the start of something akin to that rise? And he made the point today, he's already said to this group of players over this period, this fortnight period, that this time last year at Bristol, they were on 11 points, 3 points better off, and they ended up in the playoffs. So that is possible. That trajectory is possible. But it needs to start happening pretty soon. And Liam Manning, above all else, knows it needs to start happening pretty soon. As he reiterated today, it's all well and good talking about some of the positives, even if you don't really buy into, you know, where he's coming from. But there, I think there have been glimmers and shafts of light in some of the last two performances. It hasn't got the job done in terms of results. And that is why he, firstly, knows that from this point onwards, it has to be about results. And if the results don't come, as good a guy as he is, as genuine as he is, as much as you're pulling for him through what he's gone through, him and his family, then I think it is inevitable that change will happen. But of itself, that to me doesn't, as Chris Sutton, I think, rightly hit the nail on the head. You look at this squad at the minute, and that then it brings into the recruitment aspect of it. It brings in the player rehabbing, which is pertinent again with Cordoba, even though I know he's actually done the injury over in Panama. But you have to question again, maybe with it being a muscular injury, what's the lead up into that happening in terms of the workload and what they're doing with him at Colney? All of those issues are not in Liam Manning's direct gift, but they all pull together to where we find ourselves, which is seemingly on and off the pitch, a club that's lost a bit of direction.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I mean, you say off the pitch as well, and I agree with, I think, most of what you said there about what's happening on the pitch. And you spoke about the fact that right now, as we speak, there is a meeting going on at Carrow Road in the Lion and Castle. We've got a live blog going now over at pinken.com. So maybe two screen it and listen to this and also read that. But it's really interesting because from the pictures that Connor's put out there, it looks like there are a lot of people that have turned up. And actually, we've got a comment from someone who I think actually is there or was there. Graham Leader says, disgraceful, ignorant answers from the club at the forum this evening. Plainly evident they consulted no fans whatsoever. So, if you have been at today's meeting, if you've got some strong thoughts on the whole River End situation, then I'd definitely like to hear your thoughts on what's going on at the moment. Request to be a speaker and you can tell us what you think of that and what you make of that whole situation. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of unrest coming from that side of things. Obviously, fans aren't happy with what they're seeing on the pitch. I think because of results and performances, neither of them are really coming together at the moment. So I'm interested to know, Paddy, what you make of kind of the fan sentiment and what you'd expect against Bristol City, because that kind of feels to me like it has the opportunity to turn in a big way, because it's not going to feel good as a Norwich City fan if you're there in the home end. You've watched, what, six consecutive home losses now under Liam Manning and his former club, who he left in the summer, who have a smaller budget than Norwich, who are traditionally a smaller club than Norwich, are there in the away end celebrating a victory that makes it look like he's made the wrong move. That has the potential to be quite a big moment, doesn't it? And yeah, what do you expect from that? Kind of the fans and the feeling, you know, when we get to Carrow Road on Saturday. Before I bring in Cal, what do you make of that?
Well, what I don't hope we have, Sam, is albeit it was a very small pocket from the away end, but go back to, you know, just under 2 weeks, final stages at Portman Road. Understandably, the deliriously happy home fans were berating Manning with chants of you're getting sacked in the morning, and you know, one or two clearly audible voices from the away end were joining in. Now, what we certainly don't want is, because I'd imagine despite, you know, the circumstances of his time at Bristol, the fact that he left them in the summer, as you rightly said, definitely. Walked out on a team who had got to the top six because he clearly felt Norwich was a better opportunity, a better vehicle for him in terms of his own personal ambition.
Yeah,
I'd imagine that that will leave a lot of those travelling Bristol supporters ready to vent their displeasure towards Liam Manning, setting aside, as I say, all the human elements around his time there. But what you don't want is Bristol are in a winning position and they break into chants, that those chants then ignite anything of a large-scale nature around the home areas, because then it's very hard to come back from that. We've seen that, and I put it to Liam today, on this factor, this Carrow Road factor, this negativity just underneath the surface. We've seen it ripple to the surface, maybe after the Wrexham 3 goals in 13 minutes, as it was. And then even find a whistle, I thought, against West Brom. A much improved performance. A game Norwich clearly should have got something from. Their keeper towards the end made one or two excellent saves. You could question, for all that weight of territory and possession, did they do enough in terms of chance creation? No. But still, nevertheless, that game, final whistle, was greeted with a lot of frustration. Again, as Liam and the coaching staff and the players went on that, by now, customary sort of a lap of appreciation. So it's there. We can't ignore it. It'd be great to get the views of anybody who wants to come on and tell us what they think in terms of the Carrow Road element this weekend, in terms of the fan base. But the reality is, if Liam Manning and these players again deliver nothing that you can get behind as a home fan that you haven't seen thus far at home, then the reaction, I think, will be obvious. And it's for me then just the scale of the reaction. You know, if it's Dean Smith levels of, you know, anger, I think, to put it in those terms, well, it was only a matter of weeks after that episode that he was gone. You know, Wagner did survive that one outburst, if you remember that Watford game
season,
when he made his changes in terms of subs in that second half, and they were greeted with pretty universal disdain. He got the win that night, and then they went on that team to get into the top six. So it isn't terminal in that sense, but nevertheless, he's tacking into a very strong headwind at the minute. He cannot afford, I don't think, for Bristol to come here and do another job on them, as Wrexham have West Brom have so on, Middlesbrough, Millwall, Southampton in the cup. If we're walking away from Carrow Road, you know, just a shade after 5 o'clock Saturday night, and it's yet another home defeat, then I really do think he's on thin ice.
Yeah, agreed. I think the pressure would be on in a big way. I'm going to invite Cal on as a speaker. He's been waiting patiently while we've been chatting. So it'll be interesting to see what Norwich fans make of that. Cal, you should be added now as a speaker if you want to unmute yourself and let us know kind of what you make of things at the moment, because it feels like there are a lot of things to talk about.
Hi Paddy, hi Sam, can you hear me? Hi, okay Cal.
Yes, perfect.
Yes Cal, thanks for coming on.
Great. I don't want to sort of create an echo chamber here, because I feel like I'm just going to raise a couple of things which you chaps have actually brought up over the last couple of weeks. But I feel like it's worth reinforcing a little bit of. I've got 2 points, really. One is I don't know whether you saw the interview with Glasner a couple of weeks ago, which was has been quoted quite a lot, when he talks about that. Essentially, the formation isn't something to die on, or the hill to die on. What you really need is a system to fit the players. And one of the quotes, which I really liked, he said that habits and patterns, basically, they're much more important than formations. And I feel like, and I don't really want to get into too hard on Liam Manning, but I feel like we're almost going down a sort of Man United tunnel here, of where we're married to this formation, and our players probably don't fit that that system that he's trying to implement. We've had this huge churn.
Do you not think there's been a little bit of flexibility? I mean, it was a back three at the start of the season, and then, you know, it's gone to a four. But do you feel like you're still seeing similarities in that formation?
Well, I think it's more to do with what they're trying to do, this U-shape sort of backwards passing, these sort of habits. With it just doesn't seem right that a team like Norwich are sitting so far back in and playing so conservatively, especially when you look at what some of the other teams are doing with much more resources. But really, my biggest point was really looking at the executive team here. And to be honest, I feel like this is something that's been going on since the end of the Stuart Webber era. where you've got him staying on, working his notice after all of those outrageous interviews which he did as well, and the handpicking of Napa, all of these communications, like I can't remember what his name was, but the communications guy that went to did he go up to Hibs or something because he had a falling out with Stuart Webber,
Ben Kensel.
Pencil, yeah. I
feel
like
that was because of a falling out, but he did go to Hibs, yeah.
But I just feel like sort of since around that time, things just seem to, that the leadership doesn't seem to have any sort of clear communication. We've had Gunn coming out saying about his contract and contradicting a little bit of what Ben Napa said. Then you've got JHT having this contradiction with what the club came out and said. Oh no, we told him way before what the expectations were, and he seemed very surprised. You've got this communications, knowing that we were going to have such a big churn at the start of this season, bringing in 11 players, and then saying, "Oh no, we still expect to be in the playoffs." And it just seems so unrealistic and so disconnected to some sort of business plan, if they do have one. And people can see through this. It's very transparent when you think you can just feed things to people and they'll believe it, and it's got no substance behind it. I feel like this is when things really break down, because this is what's happening now. Everyone is looking at it and being like, well, are you taking us for idiots, or do you really think that we believe this?
Yeah, no, I think it's probably a fair point, the communications and kind of the expectation setting. You kind of raised that, the problem of maybe talking about wanting promotion this season and being much more short term in the vision, and then bringing in 12 senior players this summer. Paddy, I'll bring you in now, because that, to me, from what Cal says, probably stands out as the thing that's caused Liam Manning quite a lot of problems in terms of the expectation. Because I think ultimately, you know, you can accuse the fans of being short-sighted and of not giving Manning time, but they weren't really told to give Manning time, were they? So that, does that strike you as one of the problems in terms of that, you know, of Manning's tenure, and maybe where the criticism has come from so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair comment. I mean, there's some great points from Cal there. I mean, as he was talking, you know, again, I'm cross-referencing the sort of Chris Sutton's state of the...
Yeah.
And that it's much bigger. It's much... You've got to zoom out, and all of those points about the executive and that lack of leadership, or the incoherence in the messaging and the communication. And obviously, again, to repeat what I've said tonight, in a different part of Norwich, there is some very unhappy Norwich fans confronting two of those executives, in Zoe Webber and Anthony Rickens. And that all flows into this disconnect, is a word that gets used a lot. But, you know, I've written about, are they listening anymore? Does it feel like if you're a fan, your club are listening to you and understand you? And they can tell you they do. But as Cal made the point, you know, actions almost what we need now. And it is hard to escape the sense that, you know, really, the day, and this isn't about Daniel Farker and all, he should have stayed and things would have been everything in the garden, because the reality is that might not have been the case. But I think the moment he, you know, in that dressing room at Brentford after that first Premier League win was dispensed with by Stuart Webber, I think that was the end of, it felt that they were on this path of laser-like focus, and they knew what their identity was, they knew what their DNA was, everybody was fully behind that in the club, off the pitch, on the pitch, the business side of the football club, the football side based up at Colney, and that had produced those unbelievable results, you know, two title wins for a club who you know, when was the last time they won a title, let alone two in short succession? I think since then, they've just lost their way, really. And that's on the pitch. That's off the pitch in terms of what are they striving to be? That what are they trying to be? We had this top 26 ambition. That was then jettisoned because it was seen to be lacking in ambition. And now, you know, that looks quite a long way away just to be a top 26 club. So, you know, obviously above that, you know, there's been a lot of churn now in terms of the ownership structure. That baton passing that has gone on, that was a process that obviously elongated, and probably was right to be, in terms of, if you're fans, you didn't want something that was felt like it was cut and shut and done overnight. You know, that gradual evolutionary process, well, that's complete now. And this is fully lock, stock and barrel, you know, Mark Attanasio and Norfolk Holdings. But still below that, a lot of the same executive is pretty much the same Acton were there previously. Ben Knapper's had just celebrated his 2-year anniversary. Does it feel now, even with the Americans firmly in control, that things are moving forward and that identity is back? That okay, we know what the end goal is, but we also can now see a path to getting there. We like what we're seeing on the pitch, off the pitch, and as a fan, as somebody who's invested in this journey, you can get behind it. I think the reality is that isn't happening on the pitch. It's not happening off the pitch either. So, you know, how the pieces get put back together is a difficult. I don't think there's an easy answer. It's going to take a hell of a lot of hard work, and it's going to take time. And this is directly contradicting, as you say, this diktat almost that Liam Manning has to get this squad around the top six, because that was the measure that ultimately Torrop was judged by and was deemed to be failing. So if he was jettisoned on that measure, if Liam Manning remains in post and we get to the end of the season and they're no further forward on the pitch, then what does that mean for his job prospects? And in turn, if it's his job prospects, you would think Ben Knapper's own job prospects would come into question. Yeah. So these are troubling times, absolutely. And I concur completely with Cal. It just feels, you know, that as a club, you know, it's hard at the moment to feel that there is that connection, and that the people who are driving this, be it executive, be it the American ownership, be it on the footballing side, Liam Manning and the coaching staff, and Ben Knapper and Neil Adams, are they all A, on the same page, and B, are they actually moving this club forward? Is there a sense this club is on the front foot? I think the answer right now is it's not.
No, and I think a lot of fans agree with you. We've had Bridget James saying, really agree, there is no sense of leadership at the top. It's affected us massively and began when Stuart started on his mountain mission and voiced his desire to do other things. I think from what I've seen across sort of social media as well, it's almost, I mean, it's not two distinct camps. There are some people who think there are problems with Manning and with the board, but kind of there are two large groups of people who either think it's just the silver bullet of get rid of Manning and who think there really are big structural problems. I mean, Cal, you've spoken a lot about the board and your frustrations with the board. So that feels like you're maybe in the camp that the problems are bigger, or do you think the responsibility also rests with Liam Manning? And do you think sacking him would make things any better? Or do you think that it has to be kind of big structural change?
Well, first of all, I think it is really an unreasonable position which Liam Manning has been put in. I don't think that we should ever be a club where we're trying to get rid of someone after 8 or 9 games. And really, I do think that Paddy actually just reminded me that whole debacle of handing Farker a 4-year contract and going into the Premier League and not handing him any funds to try and create something, and then sacking him over Christmas. I mean, that in itself was sort of shows no backbone, and I think this is a problem which I've got a lot now, and now we've got American owners just sort of questioning a little bit of, I mean, you can't change your club, but what do we even stand for? I mean, in the Parker days, it was, we brought through some great youth players mixed in with this German talent. But I don't know, like, you look at other clubs around the world of European football. If we had something like, no, the identity of Norwich is that we always have at least a youth player on the team or something. Or we have a certain style of football, which means that the teams that are higher up than us, they like to use us as a training ground and pick off our players. I know people will be angry that doesn't show ambition. But, I mean, it's got some sort of identity, whereas now It just feels like we are being run by fools, and we're sort of going a little bit like chickens with no heads running around. We're spending this cash with no sort of forward plan. Even over the summer of the recruits, I mean, it's a very hard thing to do, recruits, but where are the lessons learned? How are we going through this year on year? So in response to your question, I feel like I don't really want to put anything on Manning, because it is just such a short amount of time. And really, this sort of stuff, the culture building, the forward planning, this needs to come up from higher up in the club. And it's just surprising, because you've got these serious businessmen now in charge, and to see it have such a lack of direction and clarity. That's the sort of thing which you would expect sort of smart investors to exactly bring in. So I guess from my side, it's it's really looking at the executive, and I mean, it's not good to hear in the short term, but it's the executive team which I think needs to be having a look at, whether it's the injuries, looking at the recruitment, the communications. Just all of this seems to be off, and these things don't usually occur just as a one-off accident. When these things occur, it seems to be accumulation of bad decisions.
Yeah, and just finally, Cal, before I let you go and don't take up any more of your evening, I wonder whether you feel like there are, you know, if there's any way to change the trajectory of things at the moment with the personnel currently at the club, or do you feel like there needs to be personnel changes? Because it feels like quite a complex problem. I think probably it's often too simplistic to just say, just get rid of everyone and that will solve things. I think Norwich have tried that in a few different ways, maybe apart from the executive that you've highlighted, to be fair, but they've done that in a few different ways over the last few years. So do you feel like they could turn it around with the people still at the club, or does it, whether it's the head coach or the executive or the players, does it have to change somewhere, you think, before Norwich can get out of this kind of, it feels like this never-ending championship cycle?
So, I mean, as sort of going on what I said before, I think that a manager should always be able to extract, a good manager should extract the best out of the players that he's got. So the answer should never be do a whole refill of the 11 that are playing on the pitch. I don't think that's the right answer. You look at our players, and I do think, I mean, we've got how we don't just do everything possible to get Sargent as involved as possible in the football game, I don't know. He's clearly a level above everyone else in this league and in our own team. But I look at some of the other players. Schwartau looks like a great prospect. And as well, even Slimani now seems to have gone off the boil, but under JHT, there was something there. And I guess this is what... I'm struggling to understand how can you have such up and down performance levels.
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
With these two different managers, when the whole point of having a director of football is to maintain some sort of consistency and line forward. So sorry, I don't know whether I have an answer, but whatever it is, Sargent needs to be at the heart of everything.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think if any of us did have the answers, then probably we would be employed in football somewhere. But yeah, appreciate that, Cal. Thanks very much for coming on. Good to speak to you. And if there's anyone who, either agrees or disagrees, has any views on the topics we've discussed already, or wants to let us know what they think about something different, then I'd love you to request to be a speaker along the bottom of the screen, and we'll add you on. Paddy, I'm going to get your thoughts on a comment we've had in from B3Z. They say the disconnect with the club and fan base is a massive worry. I fear that them coming out with the future plan every year and it failing will just take its toll, and they will lose a very loyal fan base that has stuck by through thick and thin. And when they talk about losing a loyal fan base, I mean, you look at the attendance. I think it was the West Brom game that was the lowest attendance in a league game for 14 years or something like that. I mean, it's getting to the point now. This is the fourth championship season based on performances so far. It feels like a fifth is fairly likely if they don't get dragged into that relegation battle. Do you fear that people are going to start getting bored of championship football and, you know, the attendances will drop off and people will start to disengage?
Well, I mean, two things. The cost of it as well. You know, Norwich's season tickets in certain quarters are... if not the most expensive, certainly in the top bracket. So for me, if you're paying top dollar, you deserve to see a product on the pitch, even with your natural green and yellow allegiance. But you still want to be entertained. You still want to pay that money and go somewhere of a every other weekend, and, you know, pertinent to the conversations around the Cairo revamp, but sit with people you know and you know, have forged bonds and have a like-minded desire to see a product on the pitch, which is actually... is entertaining. I mean, I go back. I mean, it. You know, two or three years ago, actually, there was. You know, I happen to know people who had fathers and mothers who were season ticket holders, and they were.
Yeah.
And we can all remember these periods when it was almost, do I go today? You would think, well, how is that even a choice? If it's got to that point, then something is clearly wrong with what your football club are not producing on the pitch? Do I even, having paid hundreds and hundreds of pounds for the privilege, put myself through more of the same, which is not an exciting spectacle? You know, other anecdotes, people who would maybe stay longer in the pre-match pubs and just eventually turn up or drift away early in the game. You know, these things have happened in the recent past, and unfortunately, at the moment, I'm sure there's a lot of people making the same, or at least questioning the same purpose. You know, do I want to continue turning up to watch a team that, you know, I don't enjoy playing? I don't enjoy clearly them not winning games of football, but even the spectacle, even the style of play, the lack of identity, you know, to pick up on a point of Cal's, to see some new, young, fresh, exciting academy-produced talents coming through. And okay, you know, there'll be inconsistencies, but something that engenders an optimism for the future. I mean, at the moment, there's precious little of that. So in answer to your question, Sam, yeah, I think, you know, that 14-year low should be an absolutely massive warning siren to those inside the football club. And it will be interesting this weekend. You know, maybe the fact that there's been no home game actually for a number of weeks, just over 2 weeks, but no actual game for 2 weeks, that you would think would see the attendance tick up again. But if they don't turn this around on the pitch, then we'll start to see, I think, a similar sort of trend to the midweek home games, to the Saturday games as well. And that's why, in that context, to do what they've embarked on with this Carrow Road revamp is a spectacular own goal. And that's before you even get to the way it was messaged, the timing of it, the lack of engagement with the most affected constituency. You know, all of those facets in this period right now, when what they're serving up at Carrow Road is far from justifying the outlay, or the time, for that matter, I'm sure. It is a concern, yeah. I can definitely see if this trend in terms of what's happening on the pitch under Liam Manning and this group of players, if that doesn't check very quickly, I think you will start to see a drop off in terms of the attendances. Now, whether that's just a short term reaction to what they're not seeing, time will tell. But the longer this goes on, then that surely is the fear. If you're inside Carrow Road, that when it gets round to this new season ticket renewal cycle, that drop off, and I think I'm right in saying I was at a briefing with Anthony Rickins, don't know if you were there, Sam, ahead of the last round of season ticket renewals. It might be the age. It might be the last AGM when we got an accounts briefing. That was it. And then in the accounts that were dropping for the last financial year, I think there was something like 1,500 season ticket drop off from the previous year, and they didn't seem unduly alarmed by that. They almost flipped it as, well, it's an opportunity to get a younger, different type of fan into the ground, which in the times when they've done really well has been the problem, that there's just been no spare capacity. But to me, that looks to be glass half full to an unnecessarily optimistic bent, because losing 1,500 season ticket holders would suggest to you that those fans aren't happy with what they're seeing and are no longer wishing to put their hard-earned behind the football club. And at the moment, it would be a surprise to me if the season ticket base grows from this point. So, yeah, absolutely. That Carrow Road factor in terms of the scale of the home support and whether it starts to contract, I think would have to be, if you're Mark Attanasio and you're Richard Resler, you would have to be very concerned, I think, on that particular asset, because that is the direct commercial translatable revenue pillar that I'm sure a lot of their projections are based on, not taking for granted having 22,000 season ticket holders and the attendant revenue, but certainly expecting that there's not going to be a massive drop off, because if there is, then that is going to drive a coach and horses through what the whole Carrow Road revamp is supposed to be aimed at, which is maybe on one level the club would have you believe it's to improve the fan experience, but I think we can all see it's actually about driving revenues. It's going to be very hard to do that if your season ticket base is starting to shrink.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I was actually speaking to someone at the club the other day about that West Brom attendance, and there was kind of these, you know, caveats about it's a midweek game and it's on TV and you know, things like this, and I can understand that when you're internal, kind of maybe you justify these things to yourself. But yeah, from what I've seen from fans, I think a lot of that was just desire to turn up and watch this team play in their fourth championship year when they're not really producing that many good performances. I'm going to bring Jonty Ponty and Daniel in next, but we've had a lot of comments, so I'm just going to whip through those first and let people know, you know, what people are saying. The Norwich SAS says, I know we are not doing very well at the minute, but we have to be realistic. We have just got an owner who will spend. The way the fans are talking, we might as well just lock the doors and turn off the lights. They are never happy, even when we're playing well. So, you know, clearly someone who wants to see a bit more patience and maybe a little bit less frustration than we're seeing at Carrow Road at the moment. Julian Roberts says the club is just too nice from the team to the bosses. We have no players that go for their teammates, i.e. a Roy Keane, Duncan Forbes type figure. The ownership, management keep players on for too long just because they are nice to have in the changing room. Jonty Ponty, I'm going to ask you about this because you said, I feel this is a long time coming and I kind of believe in the changes around the stadium. I mean, we've heard a lot about people who are maybe upset with those changes, and, you know, I think that for me would be the overwhelming view, but you've said you think they maybe are for the best in the long term. So what's your thinking behind that?
I've been listening to it quite often, and I've been to these fan parks at other clubs. I was lucky enough, I had a trip to Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund, and they had one, and it was unreal. You were able to watch, I can't remember because it, you know, it was quite a heavy weekend, but I'm pretty sure I was able to watch the game as well. And it was a great experience afterwards. You were able to hang around while the game was going on inside, and you were able to, you know, wait for everyone to come out of the stadium. And it was a great fun area to have. And the club needs to make money. We've been crying out to have money. And I understand that everyone's got sentimental value to their seats, but I think it is time for a change at the club. We've been wanting a change. We're wanting Delia out and all of this, and this is what's going to happen. This is, you know, what people have wanted, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, on the fan zone, I think you're right. I think mostly that's been kind of well received, and probably that will mean, you know, in terms of that match day experience, an improvement. But can you see why people are kind of upset about the River End situation? Because I can see both sides in terms of the revenue, and we know that's important to the club. But when they're spending, you know, £8.5 million plus on players who are delivering sort of seven championship goals a season, does it feel like it's penny pinching, you know, when you don't really need to, you know, the amounts of money are pretty incomparable when you think about the amount of anger you're causing from the River End relocations as opposed to sort of the players you're buying?
I get it, but I think the players start side of things, this has been coming.
Yeah,
I don't think we've ever been building our squad, and then maybe, I don't know, like the transfers that we weren't expecting to lose, such as people like the Todd Cantwells and people like that, you know, trying to build the team around and building those players up. I think the stuff that's been on the pitch has been a long time coming, and Wagner just was a plaster, you know, getting into the playoffs.
Yeah,
last year it's been coming, and I you know, we keep changing, and that is the problem. In moving forward, and I this is the issue that I think all of the football that's happening. I went to the West Brom game and I heard, you know, it was boring. Pure boring.
Yeah.
But I think it's been coming. Without, in hindsight, I think this is a big one, letting Farker go.
Yeah.
I don't think was the best of ideas, I'll be honest.
No, I think that's, you're in a fairly large camp there in terms of
I never wanted him to go. I even didn't really want Johannes to go last year. I just think if you've got a plan, stick to it. Don't panic. You know, there is a lot of outside noise. As fans, we do get disgruntled quite easily, but you've got a plan, you've got to stick to it. You can't keep changing. And even with the stadium things, they've just got to go for it. They've got to see the storm out. And I, once again, I can see why there is a lot of anger. But
yeah,
what happened when we knocked down the south stand and we had to relocate all the other people that were sitting in there in the original times?
Yeah,
you know, these things have to happen if we want a club to progress.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting point, and you know, it's always good to get both sides, because I think, yeah, but I'm sure there are more people who feel that way. But yeah, thanks very much, Johnson, for coming on. I'm going to move on so that we have time for everyone. But yeah, really appreciate your perspective. Paddy, I'm just going to bring you in on that quickly then, in terms of, yeah, what Johnson said. He's kind of more maybe pro the changes to the stadium and the relocation of the fans in the River End. I mean, what do you make of that? Because I suppose there is a school of thought that, you know, this is modern football and this is probably happening up and down the country. But for me, the problem with that is, you know, Norwich is supposed to be different, and, you know, they love the PR of being a different club that is, you know, family run and does things a different way. So maybe you can't really compare them to all the other clubs in the land that are modernising in this way.
No, it's a motive, because it's as we've heard subsequently, the stories, the individual stories, you know, the decades long same area of the ground, the people you've built friendships and families you've sat beside, you know, all of that. So when it becomes a motive and it's not a hard-headed pragmatic business decision being made by somebody who's looking at the bottom line, then
yeah,
this is the collision where that meets, you know, the romance of it or the emotional side of it. It's very difficult to convince maybe those 3,500 that this is the right decision. I think the reality is that in essence, that plan was always going to be met with disapproval because it is change, and you know, whether it's Norwich fan base or other fans around the country, change is difficult to comprehend. But I think what is unforgivable is how it wasn't messaged correctly, how those were not engaged with, how they were not consulted with. I mean, even tonight, it's staggering to me that they put a decision out there 2 days before the derby, and the first touch point that those fans have actually got with some senior executive types is
after
13 days after or whatever. Yeah. It is. And how can that be? That's the cart and the horse completely the wrong way around. So again, it's symptomatic of a club who aren't listening, who don't understand what the depth of feeling that this sort of decision would have unleashed, and try to not mitigate it, but actually try to understand it and empathise. And there's been none of that. So why they should be surprised by the scale of the pushback is beyond me. I think.
Yeah.
Also, we've discussed it. I think it seems to me the own goal, alongside how they didn't consult the fan base, was almost, it's an afterthought that all of these proposed changes that are designed to getting back to the Premier League and then upgrading the city stand off the back of that to generate significant increases in revenue to then sustain a playing squad who can not just get into the Premier League like they did the two times before, but be competitive, stay there and build on again. And then who knows? Yeah. It isn't beyond the realms that Norwich could do a Forest or do a Palace and have, you know, seasons in the Premier League that end with maybe even a dash of European football, which anybody with a long enough memory knows what that means to Norwich as a club going back to the 90s. So, you know, that has to be an ambition. But that has almost seemingly got lost for me in all the messaging and the plans and the roadmap. And I know it's contingent on Premier League, you know, promotion, which looks a hell of a long way off at the moment. Yeah. Let's get it straight. But surely, if you'd have to take Johnny's point, if it clearly is about trying to generate greater revenues to make a more sustainable attempt at the Premier League, then why didn't they amplify that this is what the end game was? It's almost like, you know, you have to read down way down in the press release to actually, oh right, and there's a plan here to upgrade the city stand. So again, for me, there would have been pushback irrespective how they'd handled it, but there was a far better coordinated PR strategy that clearly hasn't happened. And that's why it went nuclear in many ways, and the reverberations will continue to be felt. And none of that is conducive when Liam Manning and the football side of this are also struggling to get any go-forward momentum as well. So yeah. It's almost an imperfect storm, sadly, for Liam Manning, I think. I mean, he had to field questions about it today at his presser, and I don't that's a topic that he's got enough on his plate. The last thing he needs to be talking about is what he thinks about loyal fans being turfed out of their seats. But that's the areas he's going to get embroiled in, because he's obviously the one who is to be front and centre and front up. So, you know, I felt sorry for him on that one as well. But there's absolutely no doubt, you know, I can see Johnny's point. I can see the commercial imperative to do something in terms of the ground and the footprint of the stadium. But the way they've gone about it is staggeringly inept.
Yeah, I think, I agree. And I think the when you talk about the City Stand, and you know, whatever you make of all of the decisions, I'm bewildered by the fact that they didn't make the City Stand more of a big part of it, because ultimately, you know, the fan zone is fine and, you know, that's there. But the one thing everybody wants from stadium redevelopment at Carrow Road is to make that City Stand bigger, which is part of the plan, but they barely spoke about in the whole process. So I think that probably should have been spoken about a bit more. You know, whereas unfortunately we're spending the whole time, and probably rightly so, to be fair, but you know, from their perspective, we're spending the whole time talking about negative changes when, you know, ultimately in the long term they want to do something positive. So I think there was an opportunity there that they've certainly wasted. Finally, then, I'm going to bring in Daniel, who's been waiting patiently. I mean, we've kind of veered into stadium talk now, but Daniel, you know, there's plenty to talk about beyond that. I mean, you might want to talk about that, but. Yeah, how are you feeling as a Norwich fan at the moment?
Hi, Sam. I just wanted to make a point around the recruitment, really. I remember Connor saying on the most recent pod that it's almost like Norwich is being used as kind of a talent production factory. And that's, to be honest, that's what it feels like. You know, we bring in these kind of on a promise that, you know, have a good year and then you'll be able to move on to a big Premier League club or whatever. And of create a good dressing room, a good strong dressing room, if that's what Norwich is being advertised as, just as a stepping stone. You know, I think back to the Paul Lambert times where we had all these players who wanted to come to Norwich because they were in the peak of their career and they could get into the Premier League. But yeah, it just seems like we're becoming too much of a kind of a feeder club. I remember Thorup said last year that, I think it was after the Plymouth game that we lost, that players, it's their job to build players up and then move them on to the next step in their careers. And it just all feels a little bit off at the minute from a recruitment perspective. So yeah, that was, sorry if it was a bit of a ramble, but yeah, I just wanted to get that off my chest.
No, I think that's fair enough. And I think I've seen, you know, a few people speaking sort of to that effect, and I suppose the thing is, you can afford to do that with a certain number of players. You know, even when Norwich were at their best, they were developing players and selling them on. But you don't want a whole squad that's geared towards doing that. You want a balance where the team is good enough year on year to actually, you know, be a good team and achieve things like promotion. Whereas when the team's only good enough as a whole to be mid-table in the Championship, you know, it's all well and good having the players who are, you know, developing and you're selling on an individual basis. But it doesn't really add up to much as you know, if you're a Norwich fan watching on, because as much as, you know, it might be great to see a player bought for 5 million and sold for 30, that's only good news for Norwich fans because you think it gives you some money to reinvest and then hopefully win in the future. If you feel like the whole thing is just a kind of banking exercise, then it doesn't feel particularly good. And I've seen a lot of people that kind of feel the same. But yeah, Paddy, if I bring you in on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Does it feel similar to you in terms of the recruitment? Does it feel like it's a money-making exercise more than an exercise of creating a balanced team that can win games?
I'll be honest, when we know this is a key pillar of Norwich's strategy, it was under the Weber era, it is under the Napa era, which is finding players who have a higher transfer ceiling, shorter term they improve your team, but then they go on and you maximise that value. I always feel a bit uneasy about when I hear that, because like you, Sam, that almost feels like you're just turning players around, like you're in some auction house, and actually that should be a byproduct of a team who, the team being successful, Norwich City as a team, winning games of football, winning promotion as it is at this level, then sustaining themselves in the Premier League. And the transfer roulette element of that is a byproduct, not that gets put before the actual success of the team. I think it feels at the moment, because it isn't happening on the pitch, not just this season, but seasons recent, that the balance is off. You know, you can have a story like Gabby Zara, for example. Fantastic for him. Fantastic for Norwich in terms of, you know, they bought a player in there. I think it was 6 million initial. They sold him for, what was it, 21, 22. Brilliant economic business case. And also for Gabby Zara. And again, you heard that narrative that, well, what they did with Gabby Zara means if there's any other players in South America, I mean, it hasn't transpired, as we know, but we know they're still active in that market. But they will then look at, if you're a prospect from South America and you see the Gabby Zara story, yeah, I'll have a bit of that. I'll go to a club that will be able to do that. Borja Sainz, another great example in terms of free transfer, turned him round, had a fantastic 6 months or so last season under Torup, and then he ends up at Porto for a serious profit for Norwich. Fantastic. But, you know, they need to be in addition to, and for me, secondary to, the team on the pitch. Norwich City's team on the pitch should be the be-all and end-all. I mean, Brighton are held up as the classic case because they have got the balance right fantastically. You look at the recruitment that they've done into South America primarily, and then the figures that they've been able to sell those players on is phenomenal. And maybe they are, you know, they are the exception, and most clubs struggle to get that balance. But when it's done as well as they've done it, yet maintaining that Premier League sustained consolidation, but not just that, they've actually been able to, you know, build a group of players who can compete at the right end of the Premier League. That's what Norwich are trying to emulate. That's what Attanasio keeps holding up, them and Brentford. That's the model they want to emulate. But to do that, you need some very astute people in key positions in your football club. Because if not, then, you know, it's all very well having the idea. But what sets Brighton apart is that they've obviously had the right people to execute those plans, to have that revenue model and be successful at that, yet still pushing their team forward into a very, very good and very, very stable Premier League entity. That's what Norwich are striving to do at the moment. Yeah, it looks like they haven't succeeded in any way, shape or form in terms of purely this recruitment aspect of it. I'd agree. At the moment, you know, 8.5 million for Ante Cernac. Is there anybody in this world who thinks that they'll be able to turn him around and get a profit on him? Not at the moment, not unless something dramatically changes. Matej Jurasek, unfortunately, he's in the same bracket at the moment. And, you know, I'm struggling. I think I was asked the other day on the Q&A, who is the next John Rowe, who is the next Borja Sainz, who is the next Gabby Zara? And it's very hard to look through that Norwich squad and make a persuasive argument. I mean, I think I offered Lucy Mahovo, but that's more hope than expectation that, you know, he shows what he did in that burst when he first got into the team last year, and he kicks on again and gets into the side, and really physically he looks like he's got all the gifts and the attributes. And if he can train on again, then maybe he's the next one. But, you know, that's a leap of faith, really. There's you wouldn't look at any of those players at the moment and say they have the potential to go on, and if they've been brought in for money, far exceed the evaluations that Norwich brought in. And if that is the case, then ultimately they'll go down as recruitment failures.
Yeah, definitely. And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for this evening. Thanks to everyone who came on and spoke. Thanks, Daniel. Apologies, it ended up being quite brief, but yeah. Thanks everyone who came on and spoke. Thanks everyone who listened. This is now going to be available in podcast form going forward. So if you missed one, or you caught the end and you want to listen back, then you can do so across your favourite podcast platform. Of course, we'll be back next week when we'll have a Derby County game to break down, as well as, of course, Bristol City this weekend. So again, plenty to speak about, but we've touched on a lot of bases this evening, and it feels like maybe the feeling at the moment isn't particularly happy. But of course, the good thing about Championship football is you've often got the chance to turn the mood around. So let's see what they can produce this weekend. Thanks very much, Paddy, for joining me and for your insights. Of course, anyone who wants any more, pinkin.com/subscribe. The best place to go. Thanks again for joining us on Spaces, and we'll see you for the next one.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guarantee. Lowest prices with beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad, and luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's anniversary sale.